شخصك. Okay. You're better view. There was machlokes that today about this very question. Reuven makes a statement. I want to give a $10 million gift to somebody, and Reuven is very, very ill. So they never got around to making a ma'aseh kinyan. Is that binding or not? So that was a machlokes or belezer and rabban. This not. We learned in a mission at the end of the basra. Hamachalik nechasim apiv. The person is simply dividing up all his property. The person's dying and he wants to divide up his property to strangers. Rabbi Elazar Omer, echad bari v'echad mesukan. It doesn't make a difference whether he's healthy, whether he's deathly ill. The rule is as follows: the chasim shreisim achrayus, that refers to karka, nikdin b'kesem b'shtav chazav. There are three ways to acquire land. One is by paying for the land. One is if the seller writes a document about the land. And one is if the buyer does some improvement on the land, if he digs a hole, puts the fence, etc. Those are the only ways to acquire karka. Words alone do not do the trick. And according to Rabbi Elazar, even if the person who wants to give the gift is sick, it doesn't matter. There is no such halacha called divesh chimira. And according to Rabbi Elazar, how would a person sell movable property? The only way to do it is to drag it, to picking it up, or holding it, etc., in those types of ways. So according to Rabbi Elazar, the regular rules of kinyanim do not change just because the person is ill. The Chacham said, the Chacham said, it's not true. If it's karka, it can be transferred ownership with words alone. If it's movable objects, it can be transferred ownership with words alone. The Chachamim are the ones who subscribe to this new din called Divresh Chimrach Yisum Chimsurin. Why is that? It's been in the past that everyone agrees what Elazar is fundamentally right. Min HaTorah, there's no way to transfer ownership with the words. That's absurd. Min HaTorah, you require a Maisa Kinyan. Mit Rabbanon, the Chachamim instituted, we're going to change that for the person who's ill to make things easier for him. We don't want him to get so agitated or get so distraught. Who knows what will happen if he gets so upset about that he can't go through the Maisa Kinyan. So the Chachamim changed the rules with the Rabbanon to help the well-being a little bit of the Chola. And Rabbi Lozo said, we're not going to change the rules for that. Tough, make a Kinyan. You want to give it $10 million, make a Kinyan. So now the Chachamim and Rabbi Lozo are arguing back and forth to try to prove their respective positions. So the Chachamim said to Rabbi Lozo, bring a proof of a precedent, of a legal precedent. We have a famous story that had occurred in previous generations that was a proof positive that we are right, that there was, in fact, a formal Takanas Chachamim called Shchimira, that the Chacham in the previous generations did change the rules. What was the proof? The mother of the children of Reichel, she was very ill. She made the following statement. She says, give this object to my daughter. What was this kivinti? Your guess is in his mind. Rashi gives you the old French word, Nushka Balaz. So if you happen to be well-versed in French from the 1100s, I'm sure you'll be able to figure out what the word that means. So there are actually different opinions in the later reflection of what the world is kivinti is. Some say it's some kind of piece of jewelry. Some say it's some kind of a very expensive garment. It really makes very little difference in terms of that discussion. But the bottom line is that this lady who was very ill, she wanted to bequeath the to her daughter without going to a formal kippin. It was worth whatever it was, jewelry or clothing was worth 12 monas, which is quite a significant amount of money. I think a mona is 100 dinar. To just give you a reference point, Mishnah says in Peah that if a person has 200 dinars, they have enough money to support themselves for an entire year. So you're talking about shnei masa mona, you're talking about like 6 years worth of income. So it's quite expensive piece. Umesa, and then she died. So now there was a big fight. Whether that sale, whether that gift was valid or not. So the kibu chacham es dvareha. So the chacham accepted her words, and the chacham gave that item to the daughter. You know, one can imagine that some of the other heirs of the yorshim, the boys, probably not too thrilled about their sister walking away with the twelve million dollar piece of jewelry. So comes the chacham and said to Rabbi Elazar, we have a proof positive from that story that yes, this is the accepted view, that a shchemira can give property with words alone. So Amalem, so Rabbi Elazar had a very, very fascinating response to the Chachamim. Amalem b'nei Reichel, they're talking about these guys, the b'nei Reichel. Tikbareim imam. Literally means the mother should bury them. What in the world does that mean? So Rashi explains that Tikbareim imam means that Rabbi Elazar said, You can't bring any proofs from the Bnei Reichel. Bnei Reichel, don't talk about them. They were known to be not such good people. That whole family had a lot of problems. They were not the most pious individuals. And therefore, he gave them almost like a quasi like a curse. Don't talk about them. What does it mean to talk? Did it happen? Did it not happen? Don't talk about them. Rashi explains further that we can't bring any rayas from that story because the Chachamim didn't have the accurate version of what happened because no one wanted to talk about this Chachamim because they were such Rishayim. This whole family were all a bunch of no good dicks. So therefore, we didn't have the right story. And therefore, we can't bring any proof positive to what happened. Very, very fascinating give and take about this. Again, never met the Bnei Reichel, meeting them, but apparently they weren't so of such outstanding people. Rashi makes reference to a sugya where they appear somewhere else. But the Gemara says that the Bnei Reichel were doing something wrong in the realm of Kelayim. They were planting things in the fields that they weren't supposed to be planting, and Rabbi Lazar got very angry at them. So again, something there wasn't such good blood between Rabbi Lazar and the Bnei Reichel, leave it at that. So the bottom line is, there was a machlekes tanoim between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Is there this unique takanas racham of Shechemira or not? So that exactly is the issue we're going on in the Braisa. So the Gemara now goes to every single opinion of the Braisa from earlier in the week. Tanakama, Rabbi Elazar. The Tanakama of the Braisa said that when Reuven sent a gift with Shimon to bring to Levi, and now it turns out that Levi dies, the money goes right back to Reuven. So Tanakama holds it, Rabbi Elazar, that there was no kinyan. That's it. That's all that matters. According to Rabbi Elazar, there's only one question they asked. Did you do a formal Maisa kinyan? Did the recipient pick up the item? The answer is no, and the game's over. The fact that Reuven wanted to, he said a story, he gave a savor that he wants to give money to Levi, that's irrelevant. That's the view of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Yaakov, Namik, Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Yaakov also agreed to Rabbi Elazar's view that the money goes back to the original owner. Afagav the Mislo, I mean, Mr. Kavni Remes. And they go even one step further than the first opinion. They say even if Reuven, the giver of this gift, subsequently dies, and we would have thought, wait a second, maybe we should follow his directives, because if they're all mitzvah l'kayim de v'yameis, aren't we supposed to follow the wishes of the deceased? So Rabbi Nosson and Yaakov said, no, there's no such halacha. It's a nice idea, but it's not a halacha. And therefore, you're not bound to give the money. You're not allowed to give the money. You can't take the money away from Reuven's yorshim just because the father made some kind of a declaration that wasn't binding in halacha. The Yeshom, who is the third view in the Braisa, says, Kirabonan. Third view says that Levi, the recipient, gets the gift, gets the money. Based on what mechanism? Because Reuven, when he made the donation, when he made the gift, he was a Shechibira. And therefore, that money goes directly to Levi, no matter what. For Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Sh'om Yishum Rabbi Meir, Ku Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who said in the name of Rabbi Meir, that fundamentally Rabbi Elazar is right, that we're not going to accept the rule of Divish Chibira. You hate the mist, Amir Mizrachav Yirameis. But if Reuven is no longer alive, then we throw in another thing into this chulet called Mitzvah L'Kayim Yirameis. So basically, as we saw earlier in the week, there are a lot of things flying around in the sheet. There are five different opinions in the Tanaim. What do you do? Because there are a lot of factors in this question. Factor number one is, do we accept the Vishkhimir? Factor number two is, do we say Mitzvah Kavim Rameis? A lot of things going around. And then finally, the Gemara says, the Chachamim say that, no, you have to split, that there is no clear-cut psak as to who's right. Is the original owner get his money back? Or does the Yerushim of Levi ultimately get the money? Why? They didn't know what the answer was. So as we said on Monday, sometimes we don't have answers, sometimes we don't know, we don't have clarity. We don't have clarity, therefore we split it. The Kan Amru and in Babel, they agreed fundamentally that it was a Safek, but they held Shudah. They held, rather than just giving a 50-50, we should make some kind of an intelligent decision. Did Reuven really mean what he said or not? If Reuven really, really wanted to give Levi the gift, let's just give it to Levi, no matter what. Because we don't know what to do anyway. So we have a right to take the, in a sense, a law limited to our own hands, make some kind of an assessment. So we have five different shittas as to what to do. For Rabbi Shimon Hanasi, at the end of the Braisa, quotes Rabbi Shimon Hanasi, who said, Maisa Slashmina. He quoted a story that, in fact, the story actually really happened. And the psak that was given at the time was that Rabbi Shimon Hanasi said, that it went back to the original Yoshim, that the gift was null and void. So now the Gemara just has a couple of loose ends about this somewhat complicated Braisa. Ibailu Rabbi Shimon Hanasi Nasihu Just a historical one. Who is this Reb Shimon HaNasi? Was he the Nasi himself? Or was he saying something over the name of the Nasi? Nasi was the highest position in Klal Yisrael. He was the head of the Beis Din. He was the head of the whole Sanhedrin. He was the top position of authority in Klal Yisrael. So is this who we're talking about, Reb Shimon HaNasi? Or we're talking about Reb Shimon who said it over the name of the Nasi? Toshva Adem Reb Yosef Alach Reb Shimon HaNasi. So we have a statement of Reb Yosef that the halacha follows Reb Shimon HaNasi. It seems to say he was the Nasi. He says, well, you can't tell. Even within that phrase, it's not clear. Nasi, but the Kavish made the Nasi. We don't know. Ultimately, was he the Nasi or was he quoted the Nasi? It was just take him. We're not sure. Very, very strange Gemara. I would say, who cares? It was the Nasi. At the end of the day, he said the Allah. It's very, very unclear why the Gemara makes a point out of exactly who he was, but that's what Chazal wanted to know, just to get every single piece of information correct. Well, one of the Achronim writes, not in this Gemara, a different Gemara said in Brachas, where the Gemara will sometimes quote a story, the Gemara will bend over backwards to get every single point right. And if there's any question about the point, the Gemara will highlight. The Gemara tells a story in the fourth book of Brachas about somebody was davening Ma'ariv early, and they're trying to figure out about the early stuff about Ma'ariv. The Gemara quotes two versions. One said he was davening Ma'ariv in front of a tree, and one said he was davening Ma'ariv in front of a pillar. So the first explained that you see Chazal wanted to show you, they wanted to highlight that they were so careful about details, even the trivial, irrelevant details they were careful about. Kavachomer, and there was a detail that was important. So they showed that they weren't just, you know, just flippantly, oh, let's tell a story, who cares? That's a story that you tell them, you know, shall show us, who cares, but it's true or not true. No, every single point, that would be 100% accurate. And otherwise, how could you pass a challenge based on stories? You have to make sure you have all the facts right. So here also, does it make difference who said it? Not really. But we want to make sure that we have every single piece of the story accurate. So Gufa. So now the Gemara goes back. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Alach Rabbi Shimon HaNasi. Whatever, whoever Shimon HaNasi was, we follow his view. He asks the Gemara about Kaimel and Dibesh Chimra Chesim Chumsumidom. How could you pass a like Rabbi Shimon HaNasi if the money goes back to the original person? We paskin like the Chachamim, the whole ninth parak of Baba Basra, assuming we follow the view of the Chachamim, the Divish Chimira, or Kichsum Chimisurin. So when a Chimira says something, it's binding. You don't require a Maisa Kinyan. So how can you say that Allah follows of Shimon and Nasi? So answer the Gemara, Rav Yosef Mukila Mebari, that Rav Yosef said that the story was not about a Chimira. There were two different versions of who this person was. The person who was giving the gift, was he well or was he sick? So on Monday, we gave a whole Shtikl Torah that he was well. Today, we gave a Shtikl Torah that he was sick. So if Yosef came to share Monday, he didn't come on Thursday. His version of the price was that he was a well person, he was a bari, and that's why we pass that the money goes back. But if he would have been a Shchemira, then he wouldn't have gotten his money back. So he asks the Gemara, but Rav Shimon HaNasi said that the money goes all the way back to the Yarshim of the Mishalech, to Reuven, giver of the gifts, Yarshim. Even though Reuven died already, we're not going to follow his directives. Yes, the Gemara, how can that be? The kind of a mitzvah, kind of a race. We pass in that like those Tanoim, that when a person gives a tzavah, he says something before he dies, you have to listen to what he says if he dies. Mitzvah, a kind of a race. So how could you have your cake and eat it? How could you pass in, like Reb Shimon HaNasi, that the money goes all the way back to Reuven at his Yarshim? What happened to the principle that's accepted the halacha of mitzvah kind of remes? Answer the Gemara, Tani Yasu Limish Alech. We had the wrong girsa in Reb Shimon HaNasi. Reb Shimon HaNasi did not say Yasu Yorshem Mishalech. There are no Yorshem. Mishalech is alive and well. Reb Shimon HaNasi was talking about sending it back to the Mishalech proper. But if the Mishalech dies, then in Ochinami, then the money goes to the Yorshem. So with all the children to the Sugyans, so basically we accept the halacha of the following principles. If a person gives a gift, when he's healthy, he requires a Maisa Kinyan, and nothing's going to trump that. It must be a formal method of acquisition. If he's a Shchemira, then the halacha says words alone can affect the gift. That's fact number one. Fact number two is, if and when a person said something and then he dies, so we're going to take that into consideration because of the principle called Mitzvah L'Kadav Remes. So even though the sale wasn't really effective, we're still going to follow what his directions are. We're still going to follow what his wishes are because of that secondary halacha called mitzvah l'kavdei remes. So five different sheetahs flying around in the story, but again, l'maisa, that's what comes out of this whole story. You can see him in the first parak, hanalacha may be kamen. Finish the first parak of Maseches Gittin, only to begin the second parak, which is also called hamei beget. So it became hamei beget basra, just stop hamei beget. So comes the mishnah and continues literally where we left off from the beginning of the Masechta. So don't think that we're going to spend the whole next parak talking about B'fanecha. We have about another blot or so to go on that, and then we're going to quickly get into other sugyas later to get it. So the mission begins. And maybe get Medina Sayyam. The person brings a get from Medina Sayyam, from far away, from what's far. So unlike the first Mishnah, where the person did what he was supposed to, he said both phrases, this fellow got a little cheap on his words. So Shaliah comes and he says, but he doesn't say or he tells us that the get was signed in my presence, but he doesn't say it was written in his presence. He's missing half the story. What the Mishnah says, he's got other problems. So he says, this get was written in my presence, and one of the witnesses signed in my presence. The other witness, I have no idea. Or the other way around. He says that only half the get was written in my presence. He saw both signatures signed, but I didn't see the entire writing of the get. So the bottom line is that all of these cases, he didn't say what he was supposed to say. The Tachanas Chacham is to say four words. Which means the whole get from A to Z was written in my presence. Both witnesses signed in my presence. Anytime you say anything short of that puzzle, the get is not acceptable. Now it gets a little more complicated. Two people bring the get. One fellow says the get was written in my presence, and the other one says the get was signed in my presence. So if you would have asked me, I would have said 1 + 1 = 2. So I have an A who says that was written, I have an A who says that was signed. What could be wrong? What could be wrong? Mishnah's puzzle. That's also no good. So the Gemara is going to discuss what exactly the problem with that. If all information was given, we're still not comfortable with that. Shnayim om b'faneinu nechtam, the echad om b'fanei nechtam. What if you have two eidim, two shlichim who come and say it was written in our presence, and one says that it was signed? So that sounds like, what could possibly be wrong about that? We have more than we need. Puzzle, she says that's also a problem. Again, the Gemara is going to explain why that's a problem. Rabbi says that's right. That kind of a statement would be acceptable. If you have the other way around, where one eight says that it was written in my presence, and two eightim say it was signed in my presence, that would be okay. So again, we have a lot of cases, a lot of moving pieces as to why some cases are good, some cases are no good, some cases are machlokes. So as the Gemara continues, the Gemara can explain what's going on behind the scenes in this somewhat complicated issue. But before we get to the complicated cases, the Gemara has a much more basic question. Why do we need this mission for? Hasulamali. Why in the world do we need a second parak to start with the same, just repeating what we learned in the first parak? Hatanulai chada zibna. We already learned one time. Hamevi get memdina sayam. Tzarech shiyam b'fai nechem b'fai nechem. So we already know from the first parak that there's such a requirement. For whatever reason, because the get has to be lishma, because you have to make sure the witness is to recognize the witness, the signature. Whatever the reasons for the first five blotters of Gittin are, why the need for the repetition? Says the Gemara, Ibe Ha'i, if it would have been just the first Mishnah, just the first Perek, Havamina would have said, Tzarech, the Mishnah is a little bit weak on its Lashon, the first Mishnah. It's just amazing get. They say, I'm Tzarech, Shayyah, if I nech, if I nech. When you bring a get from Chutzlatz, you have to say, if I nech, if I nech. The word Tzarech could mean, you have to do it. But if you didn't do it, the world's not going to come to an end. Tzarech could mean a shtichel lechatchila. Tzarech, haba, mean a tzarech, v'ilu oma kosha. I would have thought, you better say it. Yelling and screaming, you better say it. But if you don't say it, we're not going to hold the woman up from getting married. He didn't say the fadech, fadechtam. So Kamash will on the Mishnah know that when the Chachamim made this takana of saying the fadech, fadechtam, they put it into this takana. And b'dieved, the takana is binding, and the woman may not remarry unless she has that statement that accompanied the giving of the get. So the need for the second Mishnah is to highlight just how serious we take the first Mishnah. Now the Gemara goes to analyze the different nuances, the different cases in the Mishnah.
And the fun itself is a question. Where else do we have that the Mishnah needs to come back to validate the previous Mishnah?
Well, it's more than validating. It's saying that we could have mistakenly thought that the word tzarech means you have to do it, but it's not going to be ever. Sometimes the word tzarech can be lechatchila. You should do it, but the evidence kosher anyway. Kamash on the second mission, that's even possible with the evidence. So b'fani nechem chetzi, b'fani nechem kulo possible. So Mishnah gave us an example. If the Shaliah comes and says that half the get was written in my presence, even though the whole get was signed, that's not acceptable. So Gemara says, what do you mean he says half the get? Which half? Hey chetzio. Which half of the get is he testifying about? Ile mechetzi rishon. If he's testifying about the first half of the get, Hamar Rabbi Elazar, afilo kosubo l'shitachas l'shmoshu b'tzorich. The din is that if the shliach saw even the first line of the get being written l'shmo, that's okay. The shliach does not have to be there for the entire get. He has to be there when the sofer starts it, and then he can go walk around the block, go get himself a cup of coffee. So he doesn't have to sit there for the entire time that the sofer is writing the get. So how can the mishnah say that the shliach said half the get? That's no good. So says the Gemara, no. What it means is that the shliach says, I saw the last couple of lines. The shliach missed the beginning of the get. And he says, I only picked up the last three lines. That's a problem. If he sees the beginning of the get being written, the shema being written properly, so then he could say with a straight face, I was there at the beginning. I saw the sofa is competent, knows what he's doing. Even though I went outside to go take a walk, I'm sure that the sofa finished the get properly. He could say with a straight face in front of them. But if he comes in three quarters into the story, he comes up to the last line to get, how can he see what happened to the pair? How do you know what the sofa was doing 20 minutes ago? So the answer to the question is seeing half the get good or not, the answer, it depends which half you saw. If you saw the first half, then it's okay. If you saw the last half, then it's not so okay. So now the Gemara goes to work at each of the lines in the Mishnah. The Fanenecht of Kula, the Fanenecht of Chetzio Apostle. So the Shaliach gets up and he says, I can tell you with certainty the entire get from A to Z was written in my presence. But in terms of the chasimos, in terms of the signatures, I only saw one signature. I walked outside. I missed the second signature. So the Mishnah says, you're done, finished. The get's no good. Get is possible. So comes Rav Chisda and qualifies this bit. It says that this is such a problem. Amar Rav Chisda, v'afilu shnayim idem achasimus yad she'ini possible. Even if there are literally two other witnesses testifying about the other signature, that it's good, that it's valid. Nope, it's no good. So he says, one second, let's think this through. I have a get in front of me, and my goal is to ascertain that the ksiva was done properly, to ascertain that witness number one signed properly, to ascertain witness number two signed properly. If I can come away with all that information, so I'm good to go. So comes the Rav Chisda and says, not so simple. How did you get that information? So most of the information came about through the shaliach, but the second signature was told to us, was legitimized to us by two separate independent edim. So Rav Chisda says, sorry, that's no good. Puzzle. Why is that no good? What's the problem? I know every piece of information about this get is true. The shaliach is neman on the ksiva. The shaliach is neman on the first signature. And the two separate edim on neman on the second signature. What's wrong? Rav Chisda is a chiddush. My timer. O kulo bikim maget. There are two ways to prove signatures. One way of proving signature is the old style way, what we call kim shtaros. Kim shtaros means if I have a document that says that, say, you owe me $1,000, I have to prove that the signatures are valid. How do I do that? I go bring two witnesses who recognize the signatures. That's called kim shtaros. The Mishnah tells us in Gittin Aveis that instead of doing a regular kim shtaros to bother us to bring two people, we should iguna kilim berabanan to make life easier for the woman. Chazal instituted the shliach is good enough. So there's a special takanas chacham called believing the shliach. It breaks the regular rules. So you have a choice, say Chazal. You want to confirm the signatures. You can do it one of two ways. Either you can do it through takanas chacham of b'fayinachem, or you could do it through the old style way of kiyum shtaros. Then they bring you two witnesses. Either way is fine. But says of Chazal, the one thing you can't do, you can't mix and match. This is not a shmom's book. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. I have a document in front of me. How do we know the signatures are valid? One signature we validated through kiyum shtaros. The other signature we validated through tacharas lacham b'fay nechtam. Says Rav Chisda, sorry, my timer. Okula b'kiyum aget, okula tacharas lachamim. So maskev l'rava. So Rava asked, Rava was Rav Chisda, son of Rava, yes, the shvash. I said, mika midei, v'ilu amachad kasher, hashtem v'diga trei posel. He says, Rav Chisda, what you just created is something which l'chor doesn't make any sense. We're trying to figure out who wrote the second signature. Is it valid or not? So if the one shliach would say, I recognize it, the fayinechtam would be okay. So one person is okay. But if two people say it's okay, that's not okay. He says, Rav. Wait, we didn't get that. That's the next answer. So we're talking about how you talking. This doesn't make any sense. We're trying to figure out information. If Reuven tells us information, we're good to go. If Shimon and Levi tells us the same information, we're not good to go. How can Chazal make something that's so silly that one person believes, two people not believe? It just doesn't make any sense. So Rava said that cannot be the halacha. So what is the halacha? So Rabbi has another piece of bread. He gives another shekel Torah. We have to hold off for Rabbi shekel Torah to see what the attack on Rabbi shekel Torah is going to be. We'll wait till that shekel Torah for Monday. Sorry. Be careful, David.